cutting through an overload of information to get to the heart of the story. This is The Point.
Hong Kong is set to enact its own law to safeguard national security, finally fulfilling the region's constitutional duty. Nearly 27 years after the handover of the region, the outstanding loopholes in this regard are to be plucked with a bill called Safeguarding National Security. After a month-long public consultation period, the bill, as stipulated on Article 23 of the Basic Law of the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region, was introduced in the Legislative Council on March the 8th with majority support. It's not passed yet, but it has come a long way. Now, on the heels of the bloody unrests that rocked the city in 2019 and 2020, the central government in Beijing enacted a National Security Law, or NSL, for the region in June 2020. So why has the region introduced its own bill? What are the new offences that have been outlawed, and why are Western governments and mainstream media making so much noise about the bill as they did nearly 4 years ago when the NSL was about to be introduced? I'm pleased to be joined to discuss the bill from Hong Kong by four guests. They are Cam Man Foon, member of the Tuen Mun District Council of Hong Kong; Nick C. Lam, a Legislative Council member; Lawrence Ma, barrister and chairman of the Hong Kong Legal Exchange Foundation; and Edward Lehman, co-founder and chairman of Lehman Bush Hong Kong, a law firm. Gentlemen and Ms. Lam, welcome to The Point. First of all, as I said, this very much is a deja vu for me, because almost exactly 4 years ago, when the national security law that was enacted by the central government was about to be introduced for Hong Kong, we had the same kind of discussion and debates. Oh, Hong Kong is dying, is going to be in a period of fear and terror, that businesses are leaving. But surprisingly, we did a little bit of research, and according to the latest statistics, I'm just going to show you some of them. Hong Kong actually ranked number one globally in its investment environment for 2023. That's according to a third-party organization's study for last year. As for enterprise conditions, meaning how well businesses go in the region, Hong Kong ranked number two globally. Hong Kong's size of foreign direct investment inflows, meaning how attractive this place is for foreign direct investment, it ranked number four globally for the year 2020. And the number of overseas and mainland companies establishing or expanding their business in Hong Kong increased by nearly 30% over the previous year. Let me go to Mr. Kam here. You are more an observer of the business environment in Hong Kong. How come 4 years after the national security law that everybody was, you know, warning other people about, it did not dampen international business enthusiasts about this region?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me here today. Actually, if you look at the business development recently in Hong Kong, of course, after the COVID in the whole world, we of all encounter some downscale. But, you know, all of the countries in the world, they have the national security law. So I think all the businessmen, if they go to somewhere to do business, to some foreign country to business, they need to know the local law. And I don't think that those businessmen, if they are really coming here to do business, they will not be afraid of the national security law. Actually, many of the foreign businessmen, they also have business in the mainland, and they already have national security law for a long time. So I don't think that, except some foreign media, they may have some their own agenda, so they may have some they blackmail the national security law of Hong Kong. And I think when I have meeting or discuss the national security law with the foreign businessmen, they feel okay, I will look at the law and follow the law, and they will not break the law, and they feel comfortable to business here. And Hong Kong is still a very good business development environment for most of the foreign businessmen.
Yeah. Let's talk about rather the background of this legislation? Because if you read the international media, what is the general tone? Basically, is people saying, look, Beijing is tightening its grip on Hong Kong. It's taking away the freedom it has promised to the region. But if you look at Article 23 of the Basic Law of Hong Kong, which is part of the Constitutional Order of Hong Kong, and that law was enacted in 1990, nobody said anything about that law. And the Article 23 of the Basic Law says exactly this. It stipulates that the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region shall enact laws on its own to prohibit any act of treason, secession, sedition, subversion against the Central People's Government, or theft of state secrets, and to prohibit foreign political organizations or bodies from conducting political activities in the Hong Kong SAR, and to prohibit political organizations or bodies of the Hong Kong SAR from establishing ties with foreign political organizations or bodies. So it's very clear. Basically, Article 23 of the Basic Law, enacted in 1990, says specifically that Hong Kong has this duty to enact this law on its own to safeguard the national security of China. Nixie, how do you look at this obligation, which is long overdue?
Yeah, I think it's quite troublesome for a lot of Hong Kong residents. As we can see, in the earlier days, I think a lot of people just didn't really understand what is national security law. They didn't really care because Hong Kong sort of like, it looks pretty calm. But if you look deeper into the situation, we see rounds and rounds of social unrest is actually going around those election year. Like a few of the election years before and around it, we can see a wave and wave of different anti-government or anti-packaged social unrest or protests around it. But and then we see the Occupy Central, and then we see the what happens in 2019. And over that all the incidents, a lot of people sort of starting to understand, well, this is not okay. I mean, for people to choose a city to stay and to call them home, it needs to be a very safe place. As you mentioned about the business sector, they need to know that investment in the city is safe and it's going to prolong and it's going to build up, right? And what happened is during all those situations, a lot of people say, well, this is not okay. Especially in 2019, you see a lot of the violence going around town. They're burning down buildings, transportation systems. They are batching up people with different rules, like doing that like a daily basis. A lot of our business were saying, well, this is not okay. Maybe we need to move out. That's why, hence, a lot of people actually moved down to Singapore. Or this is something, it's a factual effects to Hong Kong situation. But then now, since that we enacted what I call the baby version of the national security law a few years back, it only covers sedition, secession, foreign intervention, and terrorism, right? Four kinds of laws. And what happened is the town is getting much better. When my friends visit Hong Kong, they told me, I remember back in 2019, because I was having a miscarriage, so my friend fly down from Malaysia to come and visit me. And I say to him, well, which hotel you're staying tonight? He said, well, no, I'm flying back today. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why? You're flying in from Malaysia, and then why are you going back today? I said, well, I see a man got burned down in the streets. I feel very scared, so I just want to visit you to make sure that you're okay. I'm going back tonight. Mm-hmm. So that was the situation, how people see and perceive Hong Kong during that time. And this is not okay for anyone to build their business or call this place a home. Yeah. But now we can see number. We have 250 million funds flooded into our stock market. 351 international and mainland companies actually set up in Hong Kong after enactment of our national security law. Mm. And what happened is even AstraZeneca was planning to set up their R&D centers in Hong Kong. Mm. So if we see a lot of Western politicians, right, saying, God, this is not safe, Hong Kong is dying, then why are these people so well-developed countries and well-developed, like businessmen, choose Hong Kong to come back to Hong Kong to invest?
Good question. Good question. Let's leave it there for the time being. Yeah. Edward, you are back online. Tell us about the sentiments of foreign businesses over the past four years. Have they been deterred? Have they been feeling disturbed by the national security law that's in place? And how are they feeling about the new legislation that's been introduced by Hong Kong itself?
Yeah, I mean, business craves certainty. Business craves laws, policies, and regulations that they can understand. Hong Kong has been known for that. There's a separation between the judiciary and the legislative body. And I think that, you know, just like a territory in the United States, Puerto Rico, American Virgin Islands, American Samoa, these are areas that have to adhere to the United States laws, policies, and regulations on national security. And then each of them make their own indications locally. So I think that, you know, there's confidence in as much as that people are looking at Article 23 and they're expanding upon it, both in a legislative way and then inevitably in a judicial way. I think that the foreign media has hyped this thing up to be something that is not really. And as a result, this breeds fear, and then fear emanates back to those people who don't understand law or policy or regulations. So, I mean, this is one country. I mean, it's China. It's two systems. It's implemented in a different way. And certainly expanding upon in the toolkit under Article 23 of the Basic Law is something that no one should be afraid of necessarily. And there hasn't really been negative feedback with regards to this specifically. And I think that us just talking about it now is a way to assuage business on saying that everything's okay. And as you reported at the top of the show, it's a very dynamic place. It's like no other place in the world, Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And the legislature is good, and the judiciary is good and sound, and there's a separation between those two things. So, you know, I think that the confidence is there. I think Western media reporting makes it sound like some kind of cataclysm, but it's not.
Yeah. Well, Lawrence, from a legal perspective, before the NSL was introduced in June 2020, and before this law, this bill that will be introduced on Hong Kong's own initiative, if some kind of crime was committed in Hong Kong, harming national security, either of the region or of China, what kind of laws could people invoke?
Well, you've got to understand that the national security law covers only four areas. First, succession, which is to separate Hong Kong from China. Second, subversion, which is to overthrow the government. Third, anti-terrorism, which is violence committed for political aim. And fourth, collusion with foreign forces to endanger national security, saying, for example, waging wars against China, or to rig an election, or to call for foreign sanction.
Yeah. Lawrence, sorry for interrupting. So you are saying before June 2020, if someone would commit sedition, for instance, there would be no law in Hong Kong to charge them against?
No, there was an old law called seditious intention in Section 9 and 10 of the Crimes Ordinance, but they were very outdated. So no one was prosecuted under those sections because they were drafted by the colonial government and it was outdated. So this time, in Article 23 legislation, there's a new revamped version of seditious intention so as to catch people who try to incite people to overthrow the government.
Yeah. So is it normal that for an important region such as Hong Kong, that it builds the fences to plug these holes in terms of national security? So in case someone commit a crime such as treason, such as sedition, there are local laws and up-to-date laws that can deal with it. Lawrence?
Of course, it's not just for subversion and sedition, because the current Article 23 legislation would cover, for example, theft of state secrets. If someone steals embargo government policy documents, or it covers also espionage, spying, by, for example, taking photographs of a military facility and sending them to a foreign country. And very importantly, prohibition on foreign interferences, which is, for example, rigging an election so that a candidate who is supported by foreign forces got elected. So these are new laws. They are not covered in the existing legal system in Hong Kong without this new Article 23 legislation.
Right, so there are loopholes, you're saying. But this bill, the language of this bill, has been criticized by some in the West as broad and vague. I just looked around, for instance, the US federal law concerning national security and wonder whether their wording is broad and vague as well. For instance, when it comes to seditious conspiracy, which took part in the riots on Capitol Hill a couple of years ago, were charged with, it says if two or more persons in any state or territory or in any place subject to the jurisdiction of the United States conscribe to overthrow, put down, or to destroy by force the government of the United States, or to levy war against them, or to oppose by force the authority thereof, or by force to prevent, hinder, and delay the execution of any law of the United States, or by force to seize, take, or possess any property of the United States contrary to the authority thereof, they shall each be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years or both. So this is a provision in the United States law concerning seditious conspiracy. Mr. Kam, from your perspective, is that broad or vague or not?
I mean, in common law, a lot of time you will see some weakness in the law, and this provide some room for the jurisdiction section for the judge to make some decision according to the evidence. And I would give some example that, because many foreigner or many Western media, they always say that this national security law or the Article 23 may threaten some business or some foreign investment. But let's look back to the United States recently. You know, their House of Commerce Committee, they just vote 50-0 to force TikTok to sell the company. I mean, this kind of law to just against one company, it's even more devil
on grounds of national security.
Business. Yeah. So how come nobody discuss about that? If a country, they are afraid of a company and make a law just against one company because it's so successful and so influential, and they will force them to sell it. And I think it's more devil to the business world.
Why do you think, Mr. Kam, then, do you think there is a double standard there? Why do you think this double standard is being applied to Hong Kong then?
You know, there's always some countries, they want to keep their hegemony, they want to keep their power as the number one in the world. It's from the realism international relations theory. It's totally understandable. But if you are so double standard, like so devil, to especially you claim yourself as a capitalism country and you make some law that anti your own value, it will lose your own reputation in the world, and they will have their own revenge later.
Nixie, I wonder, what is your take on this? Why do you think Western governments, especially the United States, have been, and their government and their representative in Hong Kong, have been particularly vocal expressing concern about this legislation? Why do you think that they are so concerned about being under the jurisdiction of national security laws in Hong Kong?
Well, I think it's an undeniable situation that the US and the Chinese government is in a rivalry right now. As Mr. Kam just mentioned, the US government's been trying to use a lot of different methods to trying to attack, especially using Hong Kong as a battlefield, I would call it, to do this rivalry. What happened is we in Hong Kong is a very international city, and they're trying to use all the other ways to try to attack Hong Kong to prove that they're doing it right, and then China is wrong and this and that. Same to the situation where what happened is a lot of the investment. I spoke to some of the financial sector's representatives, and they are saying that a lot of US company were told under table to say, well, you shouldn't have any China or Hong Kong related stock in tech in your compositions and things like that. Investments. A lot of the company were asked to provide China Plus versions. That means if you can't work in China, can you move it to Southeast Asia or things like that. That is what has been happening since the social unrest in 2019. And on top of that, when we're talking about double standards, I think a very vivid proof is that we see a lot of the we see the previously a few months ago, the U.S. Senators recalling to sanction our law, our judges, and also to sanction our professionals, legal professions, to make sure that things play with a line of the game. What happens is if you are so respectful to the fairness and so respectful to laws and regulations and things like that, why are you asking to sanction the lawyers and judges that is doing their own job? They're international. They're not like some, they're not like Jimmy Lies, just like acting as like their puppets, right? Just doing whatever they have to do. So what happened is we can see very clearly the intention just to pressure mainland using Hong Kong. But what we're just trying to do our own job, and we are very reputable in the international market. And so on top of that, we also...
Yeah, sorry for interrupting. There are some concerns, however, about, you know, people having suffering a chilling effect, thinking, oh, I may break the law, so I will not say certain things. I will not criticize the government. I will not, you know, express my opinion so freely. And I think that's the opinion shared by some ordinary people who may not be anti or hostile to China at all. Edward, what is your understanding of the kind of safeguards that may have been put in place? Are there these safeguards to make sure that civil liberties are not infringed upon when national security interests are being safeguarded?
Yeah, I mean, there's this balance between individual liberties and freedom of speech and freedom of assembly and those types of things. And that has to be balanced with security and anti-terrorism and all these and national security law and everything in the local, you know, basic law of Article 23. There's a balance. You know, remember, Abraham Lincoln had to suspend due process during the Civil War. Okay, the Patriot Act suspends certain amount of due process that was enacted after 2011. And Edward Snowden, for example, you know, is now living in Russia and supposedly was, you know, doing things that were against the United States. Julian Assange is in a prison in the United States, and I'm not sure that he's really been charged
in
with
the
any
UK.
Crime.
He's been charged for assisting the disclosure of classified information under the U.S. law.
Right. And so what I'm saying is there's extraterritorial, and I'm trying to put this in perspective for the common person. The common person becomes afraid because they don't understand the nuances or the parsing out of these types of things. This is really, you know, the expansion of Article Basic Law 23 is to allow them some certainty with regards to what the legislation said. As was brought up by one of our other guests, there's some holes in that legislation, and it's really there to protect them and stay within those boundaries. I know it doesn't seem like it. Then it will be, but it will be further clarified by the judiciary, because in Hong Kong, the judiciary makes law. So there's laws, policies, and regulations written by LegCo, and then it's interpreted by the judiciary, and then it will become more clear as specifically how to live under this rule. Mm-hmm. What we have is a lot of Western media that's second-guessing and that is putting pressure on Hong Kong right now and saying, hey, they're doing some process in their legislation. They are going above and beyond. I don't think Beijing has asked them to do this. Mm-hmm. I think that Hong Kong, the LegCo, is doing it voluntarily, and they would like to make it continue to have it be a flourishing economic city and a great place to do business. So I don't think they're trying to harm themselves.
Yeah. That's a very interesting point. Lawrence, finally, in terms of technicality, do you see the effort in the legislature, in the drafting of the bill, to protect ordinary people who may have stepped on something without knowing, for instance, an ordinary person without intention to harm national security? How can they be protected that they are not being charged with, you know, with a crime which specifically emphasizes the intention to harm national security?
Well, of course. I mean, if you understand the common law system for any criminal offenses, the prosecution has to prove two things. One is mens rea, the other is actus reus. Now, what mens rea means is the intention. If you do not have an intention to commit a crime, then you cannot be charged, and even you're charged, that you will not be convicted for that crime. Even your act did amount to infringement of the offence. So mens rea has been the cardinal requirement, or the intention has been a cardinal requirement of proving a crime being committed and conviction. So that is still in Hong Kong. Article 23 legislation has not done it away. It cannot be done away. It is always in our criminal justice system. So people do not have to worry. If you do not have the intention to commit a crime, you won't be convicted or you won't be charged. Mm.
Finally, Lam, it's said that 3/4 of people, according to one poll, support this legislation. And according to the kind of feedback that the legislators got on the draft, 96% of people gave positive feedback. What is your observation of the kind of popular support the drafting of this bill has among the ordinary people in Hong Kong? 1 minute, please.
Yes, I mentioned, I think, the amount of support definitely comes from what they experienced in 2019. It's a terrible experience as a city that you're living in, the situation that you're living in. Hence, when we are going around cities, so speaking to a lot of businessmen, they say that they totally support, and what they want is for the government to get the bill done, and then to build up our economy better in this situation. So what they want is their livelihood, safeguarding their livelihood and safety, and make sure the city will boom again. So that is the common, I'm sure Mr. Kam will also agree with that, the people from the Tuen Mun will totally agree, to focus in our economy and then to prospect our situations, yeah. Not focus in all of these terrible issues.
Yeah, one sentence maybe, Mr. Kam, the people in your district, you are a district council member, what is the overwhelming opinion in your council member? One sentence, please, really.
Yeah, most of the people in my community, they support to establish the Article 24 as soon as possible. It's a working process. People experience what happened in 2019, and they want it as soon as possible.
Thank you. We have to leave it there. Definitely keeping a watch on the situation. Many thanks to Kam Am Phun, member of District Council from Tong Men, Nixie Lam, Legislative Council member, Lawrence Ma, barrister and chairman of Hong Kong Legal Exchange Foundation, and Edward Lehman, co-founder and chairman of Lehman Bush Hong Kong. And with that, we come to the end of this special edition of The Point with me, Liu Xin. As always, you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter using the handle Lu Xin in Beijing. You've got the point.